Welcome to Flower Farmer Forum, the podcast where growing and selling cut flowers isn't just a dream, it's a reality. With over 100,000 downloads, this is your go-to spot for everything you need to know about turning blooms into bucks. Whether you're looking for a little bit of extra cash or dreaming of scaling up to a full-fledged flower empire, we've got you covered. I'm your host, Liz Fidler, owner and operator of Sunny Mary Meadow Flower Farm in Minnesota. In just 5 years, I went from modest beginnings with $7,000 in sales to flourishing $200,000 operation, and I'm here to tell you it's absolutely possible. But remember, peddling perishable products requires careful planning and thoughtful intention. So let's roll up our sleeves and dive in. Ready to bloom and grow? Let's get started. Hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Flower Farmer Forum podcast. I'm your host, Liz Fidler-Mergen. And today's episode, we're going to talk about dealing with competition. So this is probably the number one thing that I hear from people is, how do I stand out from competition? How do I set myself apart? How do I deal with it? How do I, you know, not step on toes, but how do I not get upset when people are undercutting me? Just different versions of this exact question. And we're going to address it a little bit. And overall, I think that competition can actually be a good thing. And we're going to talk about how to foster that collaboration among growers and just practical ways that I handle that potential competitive tension. Because the fact is, not everyone's going to come at it with this mindset. Not everyone's going to try to work on it or try to find positives with it. My number one advice that I'm going to give before we dive into this episode is focus on offense, not defense. Since becoming a business owner and growing my business to multiple six figures in revenue over a short amount of time, I have learned very quickly from other businesses in other industries what to do and what not to do, quite frankly. And that mentoring advice that I've gotten from some, it's very clear to me their scarcity mindset and their view on, you know, competition and trying to just, how can I beat them? What are they doing? And just literally watching what that person is doing and reacting based on that. And that's not going to work. That's not going to serve your customers. I'm not going to say that I'm perfect at it. I'm not going to say I don't let it get to me. I'm not going to say that it's not challenging to do this, but I focus on offense. Instead of a scarcity mindset, I have an abundancy mindset. There is enough to go around. There are people out there that want what I'm selling. There are people out there that want what I provide. There are people out there that I can tailor what I provide to what those people want to buy, what my customer base wants to buy, and just playing offense, saying, you know, this is what I have. I have good products. They're going to shop for me because they want to shop for me. They're going to support me because they want to support me, my business. They're going to see, you know, my employees are happy, my team is happy, we give back to the community, just do a good job and it will follow, versus paying attention to what everyone else does and then acting in defense. You can tell sometimes other people's social media writing, you know, they say, well, we do this, we do that, we don't do that. And it's like, okay, you're being a little passive aggressive, and I can see through what you're talking about. And you're not trying to convince them that what you have is superior. You're trying to subtly hint that other people's is inferior, and that doesn't come off right. You can always tell that tone. So my biggest advice is to play offense, not defense. So personal context, I have about 20 flower farms within 30 miles of me, which is insane. But over 200,000 people live within 15 miles of my farm. So there is room for everyone when done right. And I've heard of two flower farms that started, I don't know, 10 years ago, 5 years ago, and they both announced that this was their last season. They're throwing in the towel. I do think that everyone trying to have subscriptions, stem bars, you know, that type of thing, it's getting overdone. People are getting tired of it. And that's okay. You have to pivot. You have to be progressive in your business, in any business that you have. You cannot just set it and quit it. But I do think that there is room. And like I said, it's not like I have a monopoly in this area, but I'm still doing well and I'm still serving those customers. So remember, let's talk about a little bit more competition versus community. And there is a podcast that I listen to called Of the West, and it is Jessie Jarvis is the host, and it's amazing. But she had a guest on there that started this thing called Boutique Hub. And basically, she recommends that, how does she word it? Where two or more like businesses come together, it becomes a destination. And so I think that, some people take that quite literally in that, yep, there's room for everyone, and let's turn this into a destination. And St. Joe, Minnesota, where I am from, is the perfect example of that. However, with flowers, with a perishable product, that can be a lot different because if there are two or more like flower farmers at the same farmers market, whatever doesn't get sold gets thrown away. So it's when there's a perishable product, you can't just pretend like it's the same as any other industry. You have to think about your own product, your own industry a little bit differently. But keep in mind that competition does not need to be viewed as a threat. So instead, it should be seen as a way to learn and grow. And it's easy to feel territorial in a small niche industry like flower farming, but our ability to thrive as a collective community is what pushes us all forward. So if people get the general sense that locally grown flowers are superior, no matter which local flower farmer they're buying from, they still value that product compared to traditional flowers that are, in a floral shop. And a rising tide will lift all boats. So the stronger the collective offerings, the greater the demand grows. So when customers have more options, they begin to see the real value in locally grown flowers, and that helps us all. So, I'm going to give one example of collaborating with your competitors. There is a lumber yard in Avon, Minnesota, 10 minutes from me, called Lumber One. And I've gotten to know one of the contractors there pretty well, and they are a great example. So, they have been providing building materials to their competitors for years, with half of their building being a lumber yard, half of their business being that, but they also do construction and they have general contractors. They do contracting themselves. So they work side by side along their competition and they sell materials to their competition. And this has worked for them for 30 plus years because of a mutual respect and kind of some unwritten rules that, I'm sure there have been hurt feelings in the past, one way or the other, but by and large, it obviously works because they've been in business and they've been doing this for 30 years. And so flower farming is very similar. You can have respectful boundaries and collaboration can continue to thrive. So my example of this, and this is the example that I gave as a response, but a local business owner recently asked me, and it was kind of somewhat passive aggressively, about my relationship with a florist in the area that I supply a lot of flowers to. And he wanted to know, how does that work since, you do weddings and how, she's probably going to stop buying from you because you're now doing weddings. And I explained that we're not in direct competition. So that florist that he's speaking of has a $3,500 minimum and focuses on large weddings, day of, setup, installs, where I offer more a la carte services, and I'll still do those types of weddings, but we are filling different needs. The majority of my brides are spending somewhere between, I would say, $1,200 to $2,500, and it's, personal flowers, boutonnieres, bridesmaids, whatever, and then maybe a couple centerpieces or some buckets of flowers, and they do their own bud bases or whatever. I don't let them, depending on the DIY model, like I've got a lot of different ways that I do things, but for the most part, the centerpieces or the arrangements that I do, it's this at the head table, this here, this there, and I'm meeting a need that they wouldn't be able to fulfill elsewise. I have a much larger cooler, I have a staff, I have freelancers. I can pretty much take on five of those a la carte weddings in one weekend, whereas she's not able to do that. So I'm filling a need that she's not able to do, and she understands that. Now, are we going to have some, I don't know, competition at some point where, one bride came to me or something? Yeah, I'm sure, but we'll work through it and that's fine. But when I'm getting asked questions like that from other business owners, I can tell that in their eyes, there's no way that that can work because they're living in a scarcity mindset. They're living in a defensive mindset. And you know, it does work. It is possible, I promise. But you can't just ignore it and pretend like it's not there. You just have to try to think about what, you know, what sets you apart. And so competition forces us to innovate, to improve, to sharpen our offerings. And when we are faced with competition, we are pushed to become better versions of ourselves. And the flower farming industry needs to have a variety of pricing models and customer services approaches and specialties, and that allows different businesses to serve various customer needs. I always say this to my Petaling Perishable Products students that a flower farm, growing flowers and selling flowers, is the same as saying I sell food. And any type of food industry can be profitable and successful in its own way. And you know, one might be fast food, one might be fine dining, one might be a cooking class, one might be a food truck, one might be a grocery store. And that person is doing what they want and offering what they want, and that business has what they want because that's what they want to be doing. And so maybe your model is market size bouquets. Maybe you're doing traditional florals like a wedding. Maybe you're doing, you know, workshops, experiences, you picks on your farm. Maybe it's supplementing something else, but they can all be very, very different. So going back to that number one example, they have found success by supplying materials to their competitors while also building their own project. And this collaboration ensures mutual success. And so that's how it works with my friend Taylor or with my friend Ashley or whatever. Now that I have this farmerstoflorist.com market where I'm selling flowers and I've got five different growers in this co-op and we sell flowers to other florists or floral designers. I buy flowers. I mean, I didn't buy as many this year because I finally got my crop planning down. If you have not looked into the course, I really recommend my crop planning for your farm course because I grew the right amount of flowers. But last year in 2023, I bet I spent, oh, I gotta look at the receipt, between my friends at Blooming Creek or my friend Brianna at Back 40, I probably spent $12,000 on flowers from other flower farmers last year and resold them to my customers because I didn't have enough flowers to meet those needs. And so I think that, you know, it's mutual success that, you know, we buy from each other and then now I serve more or less as a broker to other florists in the area or other flower farmers or other studio florists in the area to connect them with locally grown flowers. And so if the system wasn't working, it wouldn't have lasted for decades like it has for Lumber One. So the same can be true for flower farming. Competition is only negative if we allow it to be.
Taking a quick break from the episode to talk about QuickBooks. I used to use a payroll company because I W-2 my employees, because if you're in Minnesota, you know that you can't get away with just 1099-ing someone when they should be W-2 because of all the new sick and safe laws. So having an established payroll system in place is your best bet, and I do it all through QuickBooks. I used to pay this company like 70 bucks a month, and I still had to send the amounts and the hours to them, and QuickBooks just does it for you. It would take me 10 minutes to send that email, and now it takes me 25 minutes total. I mean, there's my 70 bucks a month that I used to pay this accounting firm. So the best part is my employees can handle all of it on their end, entering their personal information, like their social security number, their bank account, all of that, and I don't have to ever see it. So I cannot stress enough how great QuickBooks is if you need to do a payroll. So head to the episode notes, and you will get an exclusive 30% off for 6 months offer if you use my code. This is 20% off more than you will ever find on the regular website. So make sure you use my code. Thanks.
Now, one model and policy that we go by at our farm that I started doing this a couple years ago is the Miracle on 34th Street policy. So that means putting the customer first. So if you've seen the movie Santa Claus on Miracle on 34th Street, believed in sending potential customers to another business if they can't meet their needs. So I will send someone to tailor at Wild Thyme Floral because she offers something that I don't. And while there's the chance that the customer will fall in love with the service, that's better than leaving them with no solution at all. So you build that trust through honesty. And the long-term benefits of this approach far outweigh the risk of losing a single sale. So when you help someone find what they need, even if it's not from you, they will remember that. So in the end, it's about solving problems for customers. That's what will keep them coming back and strengthen your reputation. So look at it this way. If someone calls me and says, "Hey, Liz, I would love a $100 bouquet for my wife. It's her birthday today. I need it delivered this afternoon." Odds are I cannot make that happen. And I'll say, "You know what? I can't do that. But why don't you give my friend Ashley at Green Thumb, et cetera, a call? Here's her number," or else, you can Google Green Thumb St. Cloud, but a lot of times I'll just try to find the number for them. And I'll say, "Give her a call. She should be able to do it." First of all, Ashley buys a lot of flowers wholesale from me. Second of all, I know she's going to be able to meet that need. Now, here's where the tricky part comes in. She also does wedding flowers. She also does, but look at it this way. If I can't meet that customer's need and all they remember about me is that they Googled flower farm, they called me, they can't find me. And if I say, "You know what? We do this, this, this. We have subscriptions, we have, events, and, but unfortunately we don't do that. However, give my friend a call." So now their interaction with me was still positive and they're going to come back to me. Whereas either way, they would have gone Google, called the next person, been happy with that business, and never had another thought. So, yeah, maybe I do lose their business, but I probably wasn't going to keep it anyway. So, you might as well try to keep them happy and you build that relationship over time. So, community over competition, it to me means taking actions and not just words. So, it isn't just a feel-good phrase. It's about real, tangible actions. Like you can split a tray of plugs with a fellow flower farmer, or you can do swapping of dahlias, either the tubers or the blooms during the time if one of you is short. Helping each other out doesn't weaken your business, it strengthens the overall market. So, we all have slow weeks or unexpected shortages, and knowing that there's a bigger community to lean on makes all the difference. So I want you to keep in mind that Flower Farmer Forum, this podcast, my Sunny Marymeadow coaching, the conference that we're putting on, it exists like a bridge, okay? It is to help build those relationships by fostering connections between farmers. We can all thrive together even in the same markets. And so I do think that, so there's a private PPP Facebook page for those that have taken peddling perishable products. And there is so much positive connection that goes on there. It's a pretty small network of women. It happens to be all women, but they are all wanting to help each other succeed. And there's only like 20 people in the group because they're the people that have invested in the course. And it's just very helpful. And they are all people that are taking this incredibly seriously. They are all shooting for $50,000 to $100,000 in sales. They're trying to grow their business, expand their business, make their business sustainable, hire employees, or just come up with a model that's going to be successful and work for them. But either way, use this podcast, and we do have a public group for the podcast if you click on the link in the episode notes. Or of course, I want you to come to Flower Farmer Forum Conference on January 25th in Sartell, Minnesota. But the best thing for your business is competition. So it helps everyone improve their game. And it's the very thing that makes us all better as business owners and forces us to stay innovative. I am so glad that I had to start dealing with competition or other flower farmers popping up in 2021, 2022, because otherwise I would have stayed stagnant. I wouldn't have tried to experiment with growing more ranunculus, more lisianthus, more dahlias, more premium flowers. But whether it's offering better customer service, improving your product quality, or learning new techniques, it raises the bar for everyone. And the better we all get, the more customers will recognize and appreciate the true value of our products. And so it just uplifts the industry. And when the industry improves as a whole, we all benefit. So I'm going to leave you with 10 tips for staying in your lane. First of all, stay focused on your unique offering. Remember why you started and what you serve. Just because you sell flowers doesn't mean you need to be chasing every single way. Yes, at the very beginning, you have to throw spaghetti at the wall, see what sticks. But as things start moving on, you can start saying no to things, and that feels good. Know your market, okay? Grow what your customers want to buy and not just what you enjoy growing. That's a hard one, but truly, that's what's going to help you be successful as a flower farmer. Number three, control your inputs. So don't let competition influence what you plant or how you grow. Let me say that again. If you live in a rural area that's not going to spend more than $15 on a bouquet, don't waste your time with a high tunnel and growing ranunculus. Okay, you're not going to get that money back, that time back. It's so time consuming. And you might think, oh, well, it's only 10 minutes in the morning and 10 minutes at night every single day. And the stress and the worrying about it to sell those flowers for the same price that you would sell a zinnia that you direct seeded, it just doesn't work. So do not let that influence your decision on what other flower farmers are doing. Number four, track the metrics that matter. So stay on top of your own sales data and customer feedback. That's all. Followers do not equal sales. Okay. So right now, my Instagram, I've got 6,000 followers on my flower farm page. You might say, well, that's not very much, but I have almost 2,000 people every day that watch my stories. That is phenomenal. I have 2,800 people on my email list. Still, last week, I sent out an email, 54% open rate. Over half the people that I send my emails to actually open them. Okay, and here's another, furthermore, the Flower Farmer Forum Instagram page has about, I don't know, 500 followers on Instagram. And you could say that that's not very successful, but my story views are about 400. So almost everyone that is following that page is very engaged in the podcast, in growing. They are the right people. It's not random people that are following me that have no interest in it. They are the right people that are following that page. And, my business, Sunny Mary Meadow Coaching, again, I don't want a model where 1,000 people take my Petaling Perishable Products course. I want maybe 20 people a year to take it so that I can actually talk to them, so that I can actually read their messages, so I can read their emails, answer them on the group coaching PPP, that I can, I do private coaching one-on-one as well, and I can actually fit them in and know what they're talking about when they're like, hey, remember this about my farm? Yes, I remember that. I am not for everyone, and I don't want to serve everyone. I want those flower farmers that I serve to be the ones that are taking it seriously, that say, hey, I want what you have, Liz. I want to build a business like yours. You guys know this. We're putting up this building. We decided to go for it. I am hoping that my sales this year, we should finish right around 200,000. Next year, projected to be almost 300,000 because of all the weddings that we're adding. And after year one of that building being up, I better be over $400,000 in sales. And that's insane, but it's possible and it's doable. And I started out with a little tiny farm stand. That's not including anything from the coaching. That's not including anything from the courses. That's just literally my Schedule F on my taxes. And I know that it's possible. And I want to help people that want to build something like that. So keep track of your own metrics, your own results, and don't worry about how many likes your post got or, what it looks like other people are doing. Number five. Be customer centric. So put your customers first. Think about their needs and how you can best meet them. I actually, if you guys know this, every other Friday comes out an episode of the book club, Back to Better. And my book in January, because I've got it all lined out, my book in January, I think it's going to be January, is called Know Who You're For. And it is about businesses or nonprofits or whatever, and about completely pivoting, your socials and your message and whatever to be about the customer. That's who it's for. This entire business, it's not for you. Yeah, maybe you're doing this job so that you can stay home and you can do work that matters to you, and you would much rather be dividing dahlias than sitting at a front desk of an office. However, ultimately, your business needs to be for your customers, or you're not going to have a business. So it's, putting your customers first. And their needs and how you can best meet them. That doesn't mean that you have to work their hours. That doesn't mean that you can't set boundaries, but ultimately, the heart of your business needs to be the customers. Number six, engage in healthy collaborations. So, split costs of seed trays, swap products, partner up where it makes sense. You can find healthy ways for collaboration. Don't beat a dead horse. You can understand that not everyone is going to want to do this. You can sense it right away whether or not they're interested, but just, learn from that. Number seven, limit negative comparisons. Unfollow, mute businesses on social media if they affect your mindset. Follow your own path. There is one flower farmer in the area that I have muted, and I don't know her very well. I'm sure she's a lovely person, but she was getting in my head because of the offerings that she has. And actually, it's a really good thing. When her flower farm popped up a couple of years ago, because I mean, every time a flower farm pops up, people are sending it to me and they're like, oh, watch out, watch out. And there's, like I said, there's 20 of them within how many miles of me? 20 of them within 30 miles of me. But this is the only one that made me, I don't want to say nervous, but it made me just, oh shit, she's real. Okay. But that was the best possible thing for my business, was to up level and to appreciate the fact that she prices the same as I do. She's not undercutting me. She's offering. And at first I was like, oh man, I gotta step up my game. She's good. She's got some good stuff. She's got a beautiful place. So it's a total compliment, but it's not that I'm not trying to degrade her or trying to, whatever. It's just I can't have that in my feed. I cannot pay attention to what that person is doing because then I will play defense. Oh, they're offering this. They had a tea party at the farm, or they, and I'm not saying she did or didn't, but or they're doing a stem bar here, or they're doing that, or now they're doing this. And it would just get in my head, like, oh, well, now they just announced that they're not doing this anymore. Oh God, what am I doing? Should I not be doing that? Why is she not doing that? And trying to just think about her motivations when, for all I know, maybe she's got a second job and has to work around that and can't do evening stuff. Or maybe they have a lake place and want to be gone on the weekends. They don't offer things on the weekends anymore, or whatever it might be. It doesn't matter because I don't know the motivation for why they are or are not offering something. So just unfollow or mute them and don't pay attention and focus on your own path. And then number eight, this one is really important. Celebrate wins, both yours and theirs. Be genuinely happy for the success of others because it fosters a positive community. Okay, when I hear that someone paid, $10,000 for flowers at an event and it's not a wedding that I got, and I think, oh, damn it, I wish I would have got that. Odds are there are 300 guests probably within an hour that are going to be at that wedding and see those flowers and think, wow, I want that at my wedding. And so when someone in our area has that, it just elevates the industry. It elevates the neighborhood. It elevates everything. It elevates the appreciation. It puts that in the back pocket or in the back of the mind of someone. And it's going to make other people want that. And so when someone else does that type of work that I want to be doing, or they have a successful market or a successful farmers market, or they sell out, whatever, that's good. You want that to happen. Number nine, and this one is super important, keep innovating. Always try to find ways to improve, whether it's through new products, better services, whatever. You have to keep it fresh. You have to keep it progressive. Your business cannot stand still. So number nine, keep innovating. Always find ways to improve, whether it's new products, better services, listening to what your customers want. You have to stay progressive. Number 10, trust the process. Competition is inevitable, but staying true to your plan will lead to long-term success. I'm not ready to announce it yet, but it's going to be like a weekend mastermind in February. It's going to be at our VRBO in Alexandria. It's going to be a weekend of planning marketing for your business, for your flower farm. And we are all going to sit down and like week by week, and we're going to make social graphics, and we're going to have like everything in a Google Drive, and we can tailor it to ourselves. And literally, you will get so much work done in one weekend to prepare for the entire summer, and just have to stick to that plan because, I've tried to really focus on one thing at a time with marketing because it can be really confusing. You know, if you hop on my socials and it's like, okay, now all of a sudden she's selling this or selling this. Like right now, I am focusing on my holiday offerings. I'm focusing on my Christmas and Thanksgiving centerpieces. Okay, I'm trying to get those sold out so that I can pivot and start selling subscriptions. I posted a few times about the subscriptions, but nope, I'm gonna really just hone in on those holiday events. And then once they are sold out, they are sold out. Competition is not something to fear, but something to embrace. So when you handle it the right way, it pushes us all forward and benefits the entire community. If you are coming here hoping for a solution to just get rid of your competition or make them go out of business or make the problem go away, that's not what you're going to find, and it's not possible. So truly, it is going to be a mindset shift and something that you need to just embrace. So when it's handled the right way, it pushes us all forward and benefits the entire community. And if people are not handling it the right way and they're on the defense or coming at it from a scarcity mindset, they're going to take care of the problem themselves. So just remember that community over competition, it's not just a tagline, it's an approach that can help your business and the whole industry grow stronger. So please reach out if you have any questions. Let's continue building this amazing flower farming community. I would love to have you come and attend on January 25th, 2025, Flower Farmer Forum in Sartell, Minnesota. I am just starting to announce what the panels and discussions are going to be, but we're going to have accounting 101 for your business. We're going to talk about structuring your business, paying yourself, employees, taxes, all those things. We have an accounting firm coming to do that. So that's one panel. We're going to have another discussion on extending the growing season, mainly on the front end, being, you know, your spring flowers, trying to have more flowers ready in June. So really pushing the envelope on those high tunnels, what works, what doesn't, really having conversations about, okay, which snapdragons are hardier, which stock are hardier, when do you plant things, when actually do you do that, and just kind of a community building on that. We're going to do a dahlia swap, so stay tuned on that. Whether you physically bring the tubers or you just bring your list, but we're going to have a dahlia swap part. And then we're also going to have a session on cover crops. So I don't have an official rep yet, but I am working on it. And if you know anything about me, I am confident in my ability to figure it out. So I am going to find someone that will come. And I was hoping cover crop Colin that was on the podcast, but he is like 5 hours away and he's like, it's not going to work out. And he's doing something different now. So he's not necessarily selling the cover crops. So I want someone that's there that can like literally bring some bags and sell some cover crops that we can put in small scales. So anyway, those are going to be the three things that are the four things so far that we have for Flower Farmer Forum this year. And yeah, I'm really excited to continue growing it, but it's such a great day of community and networking and learning, and you get so much value from it. So head to the episode notes if you need that. But otherwise, you can email me at podcast@sunnymarymeadow.com. Thanks.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Flower Farmer Forum. If you enjoyed today's show and want to dive deeper into the world of growing and selling cut flowers, be sure to check out our website at flowerfarmerforum.com. There you'll find every episode in written blog form, plus courses and one-to-one coaching options to help you on your flower farming journey. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Flower Farmer Forum and join our Facebook page to connect with other passionate listeners and flower enthusiasts. If you're local and want to see what we're up to, visit us at sunnymarymeadow.com or find us on Instagram and Facebook at sunnymarymeadow for my flower farm. We'd love your support. Please leave us a 5-star review and share this episode with a friend who might find it fantastic. Until next time, keep growing, keep blooming, and keep making your flower farm dreams a reality.
Flowers, flowers, we love flowers. Sunny Mary Meadow, they smell so good. SunnyMaryMeadow.com.